Synthaholics, it's the Rad Tribe Podcast.
Welcome to Synthaholics. Thank you so much for downloading the episode. This is Aaron O'Brien. With me, I have David Duncan. And
hello.
And we have a returning guest, Guy Davis. Guy Davis
hello.
Is on the Rocky Mountain Geek Tank, and he also is the artist of Witches of Flames and USS Tamberlin and many other great things that he's always doing. Welcome to the show, Guy.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me here.
Unfortunately, as we were just saying before we started recording, this is not probably the funnest show that you're ever going to be a part of.
No, this is pretty depressing, actually.
Yeah, it's got quite a few sad notes to talk about for this episode.
Yes.
At the beginning of the week, we got the death of DC Fontana. She was... a writer for the original series and for Next Gen, and I believe she penned one for DS9.
She also did Yesteryear on
Yesteryear, yes. Series.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to deep dive into that because we got a lot of stuff on that.
Oh, absolutely. And she, a lot of people say that Trek wouldn't be where it is without her today. So, and I would pretty much agree with that. So, if you're talking Roddenberry, you can't put Dorothy Fontana without that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree. And she penned a couple of the books, too.
Yeah, I never got to read any of those books, but I'm assuming they were probably just as good as her episodes that she wrote.
Yeah.
And I guess she wrote a lot of stuff, like help other writers with their scripts as well. That's what I was I gathered from a lot of the readings I've done about her as well.
Yeah, the DS9 episode Dax was co-written by DC Fontana.
Nice. We also got the death of Robert Walker. He played Charlie X in the original series. Mm-hmm. He passed away, I think, like a day or two later, after Dorothy passed. And
so Dorothy passed on December 2nd. And Robert Walker passed on December 5th.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we have just heard within the last hour to 2 hours that Renee Auberchinois has passed away as well. Odo from Deep Space Nine.
And Shady Admiral Guy from Star Trek VI.
Yeah.
Well, among many other things. He has quite a list of work.
He was in Fallout New Vegas. He voiced one of the main characters in that. Oh, he was so good. So good in that game. Mr. House is his name.
So we have his passing, and as another thing, not to diminish it, but obviously this person wasn't as big as Marita Sirtis, his husband.
Michael Lamper.
Michael Lamper had passed away as well, within the same hour or so that we heard this, so...
Right.
He passed away in his sleep. He was in one episode as well. The Vengeance Factor.
Yeah. Third season. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm just trying to help here.
I appreciate it. I need all the help I can get. But it's pretty dark.
Rough week. It was funny before the show, and about a week ago, I was just musing to myself. I was like, 2019 is almost over. It hasn't been that bad. As far as celebrity deaths and Star Trek deaths, I mean, there's been a couple sprinkled throughout the year, but it doesn't seem. I just remember 2016 being depressing, death after death after death. Like Facebook just flooded with all these celebrities that died 2016, and then Carrie Fisher being at the very very end. It was just a really rough year, and then this year is just this month is making up for it. The rest of the year, it seems.
Yeah.
What do we feel like? I mean, I. I I wanted to first talk about, I asked Guy to talk about DC Fontana because I know we've had past discussion, and I know you're a fan of hers, and yes. I know that you know quite a bit about her as well, so I thought you'd be perfect person to talk about her and her legacy and everything that she's done. But
thank you.
But Renee as well, his passing, obviously he's just as important. I mean, Odo is such a beloved character from Deep Space Nine.
Oh, he is. I mean, like, Odo and Quark is what got me through those first three seasons before it really started getting good. The good cop, the cops and robber dynamic was so good.
Yes.
Right. And he's done a bunch of it. I mean, he starred opposite of Shatner in Boston Legal, too.
So. Oh, yeah, that's true. Absolutely.
And strangely enough, I know a lot. It's not the most beloved, but I remember it's distinctly growing up is the remake of King Kong back in 1976. He was like one of like the corporate stooges trying to get oil off this island, Skull Island, when they.
Oh, that's right.
And
it's so funny all of the things where it's like you're like you turn around and you're like, is that Rene Auberjonois? I mean, like, he's the chef in Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
That's actually, amazing.
Yeah, and I mean, he sings Les Poissons, right?
Hey, mm-hmm. hey, ho, ho, ho.
Right, exactly. And right. It's like, so that was, like, one of my favorite stories about him. He was here in Denver, and a friend of mine had her two daughters with her at that time. And she had gone up to him and was like, hey, look, it's Odo. Well, the girls were very young, and so they were hiding behind her. And so Renee just starts singing Les Poissons at them. Right there.
That's awesome. Starts
singing Les Poissons.
He knew his demographic.
Out, and they just came out from around her, their mom, mm-hmm. and was like just listening to him sing.
Yeah.
I was like, that's just an amazing thing.
Yeah That's wonderful. That is really cool. Yeah,
last year at Geek Tank, he was here in Denver, and that's when we interviewed him. And another story that I love to tell about this, I'm sorry I keep cutting you off, Aaron.
It's okay.
Sorry.
Go about ahead. That. keep going
When I was sitting down with him, I was really nervous, but both of my co-hosts couldn't make it that day. And it was the only – usually we work at Geek Tank where whatever fandom we're in, we don't interview because we don't want to get starstruck. Mm-hmm. So generally speaking, I don't interview Star Trek actors. I leave that to Troy. But he couldn't make it. And so I was stuck with Renee. And so I'm very nervous, right? And so at first I sit down with him and I'm like, how do you pronounce your name? And he goes, you won't say it right. It's okay. Don't worry. And he was so sweet. And then so the cameras start rolling, and I said, you know, I'm Guy. I'm here with Rene Auberjonois. And he gets this big look on his face, and he points at me like, he got it, you know? This look on his face. He's like, you pronounced it right. So it's like he was just such a sweet guy. That's awesome. He was just so cool.
Yeah,
It's kind of sad you didn't butcher it on purpose, since you said you wouldn't get it right.
Right. Well, I was so terrified. So I once interviewed Walter Koenig,
mm-hmm.
and this is what started this battle plan. And he was we sat down, and I started. Okay, I'm here with Walter Koenig, who played Chekhov in Star Trek, and he goes, 30 years. And the same part, and what do I have to show for it? Nothing. And then he stands up, and he's like, I'm done. And he starts to walk away, and then he turns around with this big grin on his face. But by then, I was having, like, heart palpitations.
Yeah, right? I would bet, I'm like,
I just crashed an interview with Chekhov. Oh, my God.
What did I say wrong? What did I do?
Right? Exactly. All I did was just my intro, right? That's all I did was just the who he is, you know?
Right, right.
And I'm like, and I crashed the interview. And it was even funnier because the guy who was at the head of Starfest was looking at me with these huge eyes like, we're both crashing this interview. Oh, my God. So I'm always nervous. And Renee was so kind and gentle that it was like, you know, because he could see that I was nervous. And I even sort of said before then, I said, I'm sorry, I'm a major Trekkie, and you're a hero of mine, and I'm so sorry, I'm nervous. Usually we don't do this. Usually we swap back and forth so that the non-Trekkie is interviewing. Right. And he's like, don't worry about it, you'll be fine. And it was just so sweet of him.
Yeah, that's really great. We actually got to speak with Walter Koenig back on like episode 6 or 7. Yeah. Although, unfortunately, it was part of the Captain Pike Kickstarter campaign that never came to fruition.
Went anywhere.
That went anywhere. Yeah. But we spoke to him. I mean, that was him on the call with another guy named Walter and Todd Shante.
All right, right. Yeah. That was so long. That was a million years ago.
Yeah, I know. That was our one big score. And then, but, you know, we got to see Nichelle Nichols in person, and I usually don't get too starstruck, but I also fly by the seat of my pants, and Aaron's like, what are we going to say to her? I'm like, I don't know. We'll just talk to her.
Yeah, we'll just talk.
We'll just talk to her. I don't get starstruck, but I also don't plan. So it's like, eh. Same thing when we met J.G. Hertzler and Tony.
Well, Todd. He's just
super coachable.
He's a party. He's a one man party,
mm-hmm. Right?
He really is. He's like, well, would you like to drink beer? Let's drink beer.
How about Mrs. Right. Doubtfire? Did you like that movie? Like, I still haven't seen it yet.
Beer with Martok.
I know exactly. So bizarre.
That'd be so cool.
So he also, I don't know, Guy, if you watched this one, because this is a very popular show at the time, was Benson.
Benson. Yeah.
He played Clayton
Endicott.
Endicott the Third, and he was like kind of this uppity dude and always giving Benson shit.
Yeah, it was mm-hmm. beautiful.
I mean, I distinctly, because Benson was a great show at the time, and he was awesome in that. And what was the other one?
Well, he played Father Mulcahy in the original MASH, the movie.
Yes. Which I didn't see till way later.
Yeah.
Right.
I was too, I don't know what you want to call it. I was too young to see the MASH movie.
Mm. Right.
I never had seen it. I just wanted to interject real quick. I was just kind of looking at Facebook, and I saw someone posted a tweet from Marina Sirtis. This is from 8:07 this evening. It is now 10:38 p.m., the time we're recording this on Sunday night. And Marina Sirtis says, I'll be gone for a while. My beloved husband passed away peacefully in his sleep last night. For those of you waiting for a shout-out on Cameo, please forgive me. I don't feel up to it. I'll let you know when the service is back on. So, like,
yeah, I saw that
super
tweet.
Recent. And this is this tweet just, I mean, like, so it's only hours ago where we found out about this.
I know.
Of the show. It just, that's rough.
It is rough.
So sorry for you, Marina Sirtis.
Yeah. To lose your husband. That's just brutal. She's been married to him since 1996, so that's really rough.
Yeah.
That's pretty brutal.
And I saw Brett Spiner was the groomsman and somebody else.
I'm sorry, 1992. Yeah, Brent Spiner was a groomsman.
Somebody else. Was it Michael Dorn?
Michael Dorn. Yeah, they were groomsmen at the wedding, so.
Yeah. That's rough. Yeah, that's big.
And their marriage was in traditional Greek ceremony, not, in fact,
all nude?
Beta Z. Right, not Beta Z.
I thought the Greeks got all nude, too.
No. Greeks.
Isn't that how they did the Olympic Games, all nude?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, that was different. That was the whole point behind that was so that you couldn't be hiding anything.
Like your steroids.
You're right.
Steroids
weren't really like a big deal back then. It's not like you just had, you know, your fixer.
darn.
But let's just reflect a little bit on Odo. Dave is more of the big Deep Space Nine fan. I like Deep Space Nine, but I'm not as in love with it. I can just go on one thing. I've always said every time I think about Odo is the relationship between Odo and what's her name?
Kira?
Luxana Troi.
Troi.
To me, it is the sweetest, and it's, I think, only three episodes maybe.
Two or three.
Yeah, that they're together. And I just think they're the sweetest to couple when they're together. And when he has to, like, turn into his, like, you know, slime. and he sleeps in her dress or something, or, yeah, or mm-hmm. something to that nature. It's just, I think it was one of the most wonderful moments of Star Trek, period.
She's like, and, I'll be your bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved it. It's the sweetest, kindest, and she's so, Laxana is so over the top. And then when she gets with Odo, this gruff old detective CIA, you know, KGB type character.
KGB wannabe, yeah.
She just is like, she's just as sweet as she can be with this guy. So I love that. So I don't know who wants to talk about his character and as Deep Space Nine, because I think we should definitely pay some homage to Odo.
Oh, Odo is just fantastic. He's got a great arc where he's like the outcast in this solid world, and then he
right.
finds his home. And then
his home says people are a bunch of assholes.
Yeah, and then they say fuck you, and they make him solid for real. But they still keep him with his like melted face. So it's like it really. He had a really brutal. So he gets arc.
To be an ugly solid.
Yes.
Yeah.
He doesn't get to be a pretty.
You
solid.
Know that Rene had to have hated that because he really was not fond of the makeup process, and so you know. You could just see him. He's sitting there, and finally that script comes along. And he's like, oh, good! I'll be able to be a human for a while. And they're like, yeah, but we're going to keep your prosthetic going. And oh, crap.
Well, I was really hoping that each season his prosthetic would get smaller and smaller and smaller as he got better at shapeshifting, but he didn't seem like he ever improved. Even after he spent seasons practicing, after he found the Founders, and they were like, oh, you should practice your shapeshifting ability. And like, he never got better at being human, but he could be a rat with a bajillion hairs on it, but he couldn't pull off a face.
Well, maybe you don't look at maybe the rat looks just like
he
Odo.
Actually said something about that, though. Odo did.
Does he?
Yeah, I remember him saying that people got adjusted to the way he looked. And so he does that now on purpose.
Oh. You know? That's sad.
Because everybody had gotten all adjusted to the way he looked.
It would been nice if it would as a progression, it would have gotten less and less and less, and maybe the last season we got to see it, like him like be normal. It'd been kind of nice. Yeah. But you know, also his relationship with Quark is just amazing. Like I said earlier, that cop robber, you know, thing. It got me through the first three seasons when they were kind of rough and slow, but their dynamic was just great. You know, between you know Rene Auberjonois and Armin Shimerman. It was just them together on screen was so perfect.
Yeah.
Every single time that they would have some kind of interaction or Odo would be spying on him for something. And I remember one time, I think Quark was trying to bribe him with like a platinum or a latinum bucket. And Odo's like, nah.
Yeah,
just, just great. Like he's so good. Like he played and emoted so well through the makeup. I think we see it with a lot of Star Trek actors, but I think like you know him and Garak, they really were able to shine through that makeup. Armin Shimerman also.
That's what I had asked him about that. That was actually my question to him, and he was a classically trained actor, and he said that they trained mask. So they would train putting masks on and being able to act through a mask.
Really?
And he said that was the biggest reason that he was able to pull Odo off was because that he trained mask, which is a technique.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know they even did that.
Yeah, I remember doing it. We did that a little bit in college theater, mm-hmm. training with masks. We actually had to make our own masks and like do performance with like with
and you have
moving.
To train by using your eyes only,
moving
and
your head,
using your body language.
Yeah, like how you tilt your head, like this way and that. I mean, hell, the Mandalorian's got to do that completely.
Yep. Well, and that's what they'll do. They'll ask for actors that can train that have been trained mask, and if they've trained mask, then they'll be. I mean, like I can imagine that's totally one of the things they did with Mandalorian was say, okay, we need somebody who's trained mask.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. One of the other things that's interesting about Odo was his genuineness to what he did.
Mm.
Like, the character was authentically trying to explore being in the human condition. You know, we always have the human condition character. We have Spock. We have Data. And the thing about
Michael
those
Burnham.
Two... Yeah, Michael Burnham.
What's the thing about the Beholden?
The thing about the two characters, Spock and Data, is I never felt like they got immersed, right? The thing about Odo was that I feel like he really did get immersed. He had to lose himself in all of the base feelings of his own people, you know, effectively, you know, cheating on Kira and coming back to it going, okay, I think I've figured out where I am now, you know?
Yeah, right, right.
And I thought that was fascinating. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an interesting thing. I wanted to point out a couple of things about Renee that are obscure. Okay. Like, for instance, he was a voice actor in Star Blazers, which was Yamato. In,
he was?
Yes, he was.
Who did he play? He
was uncredited. But he was the voice of Sandorn in the third season.
See, I used to watch Star Blazers like, you know, like crazy.
Right?
That was my jam when I was like, whatever, 8, 9.
Right. Totally. Mine too. But he also, his voice was in Challenge of the GoBots, Superpowers Team, DuckTales.
DuckTales is Grimley, awesome. DuckTales
Superman.
Is awesome.
Who was he in DuckTales?
Snorks, Smurfs, Darkwing Duck, Batman, the animated series. Oh, I love
Darkwing Duck.
Right? And
I need a live-action gritty reboot of Darkwing Duck.
Extreme Ghostbusters.
No shit. Yeah, Ghostbusters was fun, too. He's got a very distinct voice, that gruff voice.
Right.
So it's,
well, and that was one of the things. We had him do a bump for Geek Tank, and he did the bump in all the voices.
Hmm.
You know, he's like, I'm René Auberjonois. I played Odo on Deep Space Nine. I played Endicott the Third and Mintz. I mean, he just did all the voices.
Nice.
And it was like, it's the best bump we've got.
That's awesome. Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
You guys.
It's an incredible little bump. It was just so cool.
Yeah, you know? No, that's great. That's so cool. Yeah, that he could do that.
Yeah, just on call like that. It was so weird.
Yeah. Well,
we don't have any bumps.
Yeah, I know. We got to get some bumps.
Just speed bumps.
Yeah. That's basically what we have. It's my muffler hanging off the back of my car. That's my bump.
That's all the. It's a speed bump, yeah.
We'll take what we can get.
What's a terrible bump? My muffler. Yeah, he's a quite fascinating person, and obviously just an actor. Like I said, his credits are just so long.
Right?
He's a phenomenal voice actor. I love him as Mr. House in Fallout New Vegas. I really wish my computer wasn't broken so I could go play Fallout New Vegas and follow House's quest all the way through. I love Mr. House. Did either of you play Fallout New Vegas?
No.
My wife did. It's not my style of game. It's her style of game, so she played it.
Oh, it's so good.
So I pawned that off on my wife.
Oh, okay.
I'm a MMOG person. I play Star Trek Online. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Is that all you play?
No, I play Black Desert Online, and I play No Man's Sky right now. Those are the three I'm playing.
How is No Man's Sky gotten better?
Totally gotten better.
Oh, I'm going to have to get into it.
I mean, it really, the problem with No Man's Sky, and we're diverting from Renee. Yeah. Sorry, Renee. The thing about No Man's Sky is that it's getting to the point that they wanted it to be, but they needed the money, so they had to release it before it was at the point that they wanted it to be.
It's been in beta for 2 years.
Lied to. And it's like,
yeah.
Well, it wasn't, they didn't lie. It's getting there. You know,
it's sort of a lie whenever you say this is what's going to be the game, you sell it to someone, and then it's not the game you said, and then it takes, I mean, like,
I yeah, I feel
it does for, feel bait and switch,
right?
For I people feel who bought it day one.
I mean, I don't get me wrong, it's certainly like I feel for people who are upset, but the truth is, No Man's Sky is such a radically different critter.
Mm-hmm.
That I couldn't imagine it coming out of the womb fully formed. You know what I mean?
Understood.
I mean, there's just no way. It's such a bizarre critter that it's
I mentioned
Star Citizen. Sorry, that's if that ever comes out. That's going to be a whole different pile of sheep, too.
Yeah. I mentioned to Dave almost 2 years ago when that came out that I that's something I was interested in.
I told him, no, don't do it. It's bad.
Yeah, and because it looked awesome. And it looked like my something I would get into because I don't game. I just It's not something I'm into because I'm just too busy and it's like I don't have time to invest. But I would like to do a game like that. So maybe I'll look into getting into No Man's Sky. But let's get back to
Renee. So. Renee passed away of lung cancer. So
was he a smoker?
I guess. I mean, so many of them were. I mean, my dad has COPD.
Does he? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's Nimoy, my dad's different age, too, right?
Nimoy died from COPD.
Right. Nimoy died of COPD. And that's another thing. Renee's last tweets, I'm looking back through them. You know, on the 5th, he posted, "Life is too short to be lived badly," which he's quoting somebody else. And then on the 4th, he said, "When you set out for Ithaca, ask that your way be long, full of adventure and full of instruction." And then on the 4th, he also posted, "If you're constantly aware of your mortal nature, you will only do what truly matters to you." So, I mean, it's the same thing as Nimoy. He knew
it was coming to an end.
It was coming to an end.
Really, yeah.
And it's like, that's just sad.
It's hard, but to know that you're looking at your own mortality, and you know that's it's coming soon, you know?
Yeah.
It's got to be possibly terrifying and possibly a good thing, because maybe you're in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? I don't know what his status was, but yeah.
I know that my dad goes through painful periods and not painful periods, and we've had the discussion a couple of times. But I mean, this is he's doing fine today, but he, you know, was having anxiety attacks 3 days ago and thought he was having a heart attack and it was the end. And you know what I mean? And then he had pneumonia 6 months ago. And it's when you're here, this isn't cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I feel, man.
Yeah. So. It's definitely a rough thing. And, it's a different age too. Like people just smoked like chimneys back then. I was lucky that most of my grandparents and my parents, they all kicked that habit, long time before I was even in the scene. I do remember when I was younger, my grandparents smoked, but they got rid of, they stopped, you know, when I was pretty young still. So, but yeah, I mean, it was a part of life.
Yeah. You know, we all just smoked. That's all we did. I've been really lucky. When I was 8 years old, my dad was working on a model and the top part of the cigarette dropped and he built model cars.
Okay.
And he had just painted the car.
Oh no. And
the top of his cigarette fell right into the paint and burned a hole right in the back of the car on the trunk lid. And my dad is not really a mean guy. So his whole thing was he was just sad. And I remember looking at him, and he was like, "Gosh, I hope you never start this because it's a monkey I can't get off my back."
And something about
the way he wasn't preaching, and I saw right there that smoking obviously destroyed his little car he'd been working on. Something about that moment, I just never really wanted to smoke.
Yeah, I've had friends that were smokers, and they took them long time to kick. They would stop and then they'd start again, stop and start again. It's a battle. It's just very difficult for them to stop. So it's a hard thing. Hey, if you're a smoker, do what you need to do, but obviously.
Yeah, we're not knocking anybody.
Smoke.
But it's obviously a difficult thing to kick, if you're trying to. So,
That's the thing that's big about this that I've always discovered is that it's not my dad's fault.
No.
You know, he got into it, and he can't get out of it. And he did. I mean, he quit smoking cold turkey the moment they told him he had COPD, which is better than one of my uncles who was literally smoking cigarettes in the oxygen tent. I don't know how in the world he didn't set fire to himself.
Wow.
But that was in the
80s. Controlled fire.
Right?
Only Smokey can prevent.
That happened a while back, fire. But I remember that. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking, this can't be good.
This doesn't sound good.
Advanced smoking.
Yeah, I mean, so it was a different time, like you said before, Dave, that Nimoy, he passed away, the same thing. So, and we knew Nimoy smoked. So, yeah.
It's crazy because you look at his teeth in the original series and look at his teeth in the movies. He had his teeth fixed.
Oh, yeah.
I did not notice this until someone pointed it out. Then I went and watched the original series and I was like, oh, my God. He's got the worst teeth in the original series.
Mm-hmm.
And that was due to smoking.
Yeah. That's due to smoking.
Yeah.
So, Renee was, of course, Colonel West. That was obviously one of the things.
Undiscovered Country, yeah.
Yeah, in Undiscovered Country. He was Odo. He was also Ezrael in the Enterprise episode Oasis. And he was Douglas Pabst in the DS9 episode Far Beyond the Stars.
Mm-hmm.
So that's some other notable appearances. You know, he also voiced The Rise and Fall of Khan Noonien Singh Volume 2. So he read the book.
Nice.
He was in Warped and Fallen Heroes as a narrator. He's also, of course, on Stowe, Star Trek Online, as Odo.
Cool.
So that's going to hurt going back to DS9 again. Oh, Every time I go to DS9, because I just got over Aaron Eisenberg going out to DS9.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to have to head out to DS9, and it's going to suck again because it's all going to be about Odo.
Here's a tweet from 3 minutes ago from Armin Shimmerman. It is with great heartache and loss I share with you the passing of dear Rene Auberjonois. His last message to me was entitled, "Don't Forget." I know that I, Kitty, and all that knew him will never forget. This world seems noticeably emptier now. I loved him.
Hmm.
Yeah, 3 minutes they ago.
They had a great relationship, too.
Oh, I bet. I mean, they had so many scenes.
Well, they were together. The best of friends.
Yeah.
Which probably made their scenes together. It's what made them so great, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's rough. You just can't. There's nothing you can say but just great actor, great character. And we all, you know, I mean, he's one of the reasons he just kept watching Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. And Nana says, "I love and respect Renee more than I can say right now. This beautiful soul, my heart, oh."
Mm.
And she's got a picture of Renee. So,
yeah. Well,
that's rough. So brutal.
Yeah. And we're all digesting this, too.
Like, it's just happening.
Like, within 2 hours or so.
Because we originally planned on mostly talking about DC Fontana, and then it's like, this happened, and this is, like, just hitting us now. Like, it was, like, an hour or two before we were going to record when we found out. And, like, we're seeing these tweets come in, so this is, like, happening to us now.
Oh. Yeah, live. This is all happening to us.
We're reacting to it, so it's
Terry Farrell says, "I cannot express how much you meant to me. I will truly miss you, dear colleague, mentor, father, friend, father figure, friend."
Yeah.
Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there, Dave.
Oh, no.
There's some like problems with being like 2,000 miles away from you guys.
And then we're also just like living in the moment where all this grief is being expressed all at once. And you guys are going to hear this a week after the fact or close to a week or, you know, years after the fact. But no, this is happening to us now.
Yeah. We're still having problems with it.
Like, when will then be now? Soon.
All right.
Soon.
Yes.
Brent Spiner says, "Rene was a great artist, a great man, and a great friend. He will be forever missed by all that knew him. Good night, sweet prince."
Did they share any scenes together?
They did not, but there was a couple
actors
now kind of pile together because they're often at conventions.
Star Trek Las Vegas. I mean, they all see each other once a year, probably.
Sure.
I know not all the DS9 actors go every year, but I'm sure they've got enough years where they've run into each other, and they probably shared, you know, they'll eat together, I'm sure, away from the fans.
Right. Yeah. That's just, they probably, I know that a lot of them do go to lunch togethers regularly and hang. So let's move on to Dorothy, because we've kind of covered, we'll keep bringing up, I guess, more tweets as they come in.
As they come, that's right. Happening right now, yeah.
Yeah. So Dorothy Catherine Fontana, she's like Aaron had said at the beginning of the show, she's one of my heroes. I've always sort of, that's been kind of one of my hills to die on. My mom was was one of those people who was trying to make her way in the industry in the 80s when women were still considered not good enough to make their way in the 80s. Yeah. And so I watched my mom struggle and fight and all of those things. And she and I, my mom and I connected on Star Trek. And one of the things that mom really liked was the story of DC Fontana. For those of you who don't actually know the story of DC Fontana, she was known as DC Fontana because that way she could get her credits on shows without people finding out she was a woman.
Yeah, well, saying Dorothy. Yeah, right. Dorothy Fontana.
If you said Dorothy, you knew what was exactly.
Screwed, yeah.
You'd be right. Dismissed and get, you know, like, oh, that's, yeah, let's, we're not reading your script.
Right. And that's right, exactly. As soon as they found out she was, well, you get the idea. So one of the things that is important is that this was alluded to internally in the series. Because if you watch the episode Far Beyond the Stars, which is a Deep Space Nine sixth season episode, it's an episode where they sort of have this flip-flop to where they're in the 50s and all the characters are in the 50s. And we can't tell whether Benny, who's played by Avery Brooks, is whether he's playing himself or whether, you know, it's a great thing, but one of the allusions here is Nana Visitor's character, who played K.C. Hunter, and the fact that her name is K.C. Hunter is exactly alluding to D.C. Fontana,
right,
because everything that Kay Eaton goes through is exactly what D.C. Fontana had to go through. So this was an absolute nod to DC Fontana, who's a hero of many of them.
Right.
Now, that's one of those things that was known. And that's one of those reasons why we talk a lot about Gene Roddenberry being a womanizer. And when womanizer, people say,
you're a womanizer, baby. I'm sorry.
Right. No, I mean, totally. But I mean, when people say he's a misogynist, though, I kind of draw a little bit of a line. And that's because DC Fontana showed up on his set as his secretary. That was all she was going to do, was type memos. Mm. But he realized she wanted to be a writer. And so it was Roddenberry that put her in the helm of Charlie X. And she wrote Charlie X. And that was her audition, so to speak.
Right.
So once Charlie X was written, he put her in, and she wrote Tomorrow is Yesterday, Journey to Babel, This Side of Paradise. She starts doing all of these episodes, and by second season, she's a story editor.
Right.
And if you read Mark Cushman's books,
he's the Voyages.
These are the Voyages. If you read those books, he's got a lot of memos in there. And it is clear that both Bob Justman and Gene Roddenberry see Dorothy Fontana as an equal. When she starts saying, this is a sucky script, they're all like, oh, we're sorry, we'll rewrite it. As opposed to what was normally happening in the 60s to women, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a deep respect for Dorothy Fontana.
Yeah, so you can be a womanizer and not be a misogynist.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
And I, but just but it, that, that doesn't always happen, though.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It probably it's just, rare, but it can.
Just to touch on that too, this is the time where in the '60s where free love was like a thing.
It was a different LDS idea.
We went to third season, and when we went into third season, she scripted Enterprise Incident and Way to Eden, but they were rewritten. And she hated the rewrites because Way to Eden was originally written as Joanna, and it was supposed to be Dr. McCoy's daughter.
Right, right.
And that was part of that whole thing. So, you know, they excised that and things like that. And things got really rough for her, and she got bitter and angry. But she came back to the animated series and wrote Yesteryear.
Right, which is like mined for everything now Fox's past.
The reboots, the first reboots, doesn't it? It drew heavily from Yesteryear.
Even Discovery
is drawing from Yesteryear a lot.
The fact that it's Shakar is where Spock is from, that was put in Yesteryear. There are all kinds of things in there that are pulled directly from that. So going into the Next Gen, she was tapped to write Encounter at Farpoint.
Right.
Which got her a Hugo Award nomination.
Right. Yeah.
She's one of the co-inventors of Alcars. And all of the things
Okudas, right? She co-invented it with the Okudas, right?
Yeah. But the key thing here is that, like, if you watch Encounter at Farpoint 1 and 2, you can see all the things she's establishing for Next Generation.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. Now, I mean, Roddenberry brought back Jessamyn and Milicus and David Gerold to do all of that. So he brought back his old team, but he didn't have to bring her back, but he did.
Right.
You know what I mean?
He needed her. Yeah.
He needed her. And A-team. She established all of those things, you know?
Right. So, now that came a Counterpoint had like a big rewrite with a Q aspect, right?
Yeah,
correct.
Roddenberry put the Q part in, I think, because the network, or I know it was syndicated, but they wanted it to be a two parter, not a single hour.
Okay, right. Gotcha.
Understood. And so I think Roddenberry did the Q part, which I love the Q part. I love Q.
Yeah, but Fontana hated it.
I'm sorry,
because that wasn't part of her. Originally, it was just, you know, the Enterprise goes and saves the day sort of episode, instead of the Enterprise has to go save the day, otherwise this Q creature is going to throw all the humans back on the Earth and make them all into Neanderthals. You know, she was like, it was good enough as it stood. It didn't need more.
I mean, so we got John DeLancey. So
John DeLancey is
gone. Well, and that's the other thing. Fontana has said many times on record that A, she didn't like the addition of Q, but she loves the addition of John DeLancey and the way he evolved Q later on,
right,
and his ownership of it. So she's nothing I ever say is ever a knock against DeLancey.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's that.
Well, I'm sure it sucks to have your script reworked, but I mean, like, they needed a two-parter and it wasn't written as a two-parter, so they needed filler. And for Q being filler, it is some of the best spontaneous filler Star Trek has ever done. Because usually Star Trek filler is not very good. Like, we get these pointless B plots that don't add anything to the story. And like we were saying, we just did the Wire episode with Garak.
Code of Honor. I'm sorry, I just coughed. I don't know.
I know. Code of Honor is terrible.
Yeah,
that's a brutal one, man.
No, but we did The Wire, and that episode has no B plot, and it felt amazing to watch an episode that was a single story, only a couple characters that had no B plot, and it felt like a short episode because it was so well done.
Well, and that's one of the things that makes DS9 also very good, is there's a lot of episodes where they just went with the A plot, and it holds.
Yeah.
Assault on AR-556. You know, it's that one's a good one as far as like holding one line.
Yeah, we also lost Aaron Eisenberg, and that's the episode he lost his leg.
Right. And you know, and then you have episodes where they have excellent B plots like Rocks and Shoals, where the B plot is just as shocking as the A plot.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both just making you go, "Oh my god."
Or the episode where Odo gets married. That's like the B plot, but that's way better than the rest of the episode.
Right.
To Oksana, like we were talking about earlier.
Yes. So here's another interesting side note about Dorothy Fontana. She has a pseudonym that she used when she was on certain scripts, that she, especially when she was unhappy about it. And her pseudonym was Michael Bingham.
What was that? What was that a reference to?
It isn't.
Oh, it is.
But Discovery's Michael Burnham is. It's
really close to it, yeah.
So there's a certain amount of, like, that's just, that was just who she used whenever she, like, she co-wrote The Naked Now, and yeah, she hated it. So
why did she hate it?
The Naked Now?
Yeah, why did she hate that script?
Oh, it's a brutal script, dude. That's a brutal episode.
No, I remember. I remember it, of course.
I mean, yeah, other than the fact that everybody and their uncle continues to quote the fact that Data is fully functional. Short of that, that entire episode's trash.
Yeah, no, I know. But
hey, that outfit Tasha is wearing was pretty good.
Okay, well,
it's the one time she looked Tasha's hot.
Wearing and Data being fully functional, everything else about that's trash.
Actually, also her stealing Deanna's clothes, and we never saw Deanna wear any of those clothes, which is also right? It's also a kind
We're
of a
just
crime.
Saying.
I mean, where are those clothes? Why didn't Deanna wear that thing after Tasha did?
Right.
Maybe she stole it off of Deanna.
Tasha died. Take it back.
So one of the other things that's in here is, of course, that she pinned the DS9 episode Dax.
Yeah.
And that was the last time that she was involved with Trek as a writer in that instance.
I kind of feel bad that, like, I didn't realize Dorothy Fontana, we talked about Dax like almost a year ago because we were doing this our Spotting Dax series. And,
right.
And we just kind of felt like Dax was so underdeveloped in the episode that was about her.
Yeah.
Kind of surprising that she wrote that one, because usually, I mean, you think she'd write for a stronger female character, and Dax barely says a word that episode.
Right. Well,
she's on trial the whole time.
Yeah, it is kind of. I mean, so when she bows at Dax, then there are a couple of times where we tap back. Like we were talking about Far Beyond the Stars, Kay Eaton is obviously an homage to Fontana. But in Enterprise, First Flight, they honor her work on the episode Tomorrow's Yesterday by including her name, right, on a mission patch for the Earth-Saturn probe. So they show the patch for the Earth-Saturn probe that was Christopher, what's his name? I've forgotten now because names suck.
Names suck.
Right. But his the guy who was in Tomorrow's Yesterday.
Not Christopher Nolan.
The patch seen in the 602 Club. And when it is, you can see that the people who went to the Earth-Saturn probe, including Christopher, who was Jason Christopher, I think was the son, including him was D.C. Fontana. So, yeah, it's one of those things. So a copy of this was sent to Fontana by Michael Okuda, of course. So that's a thing. She wrote for a ton of other things. Like, she wrote stories for Star Trek The Secret of Vulcan Fury, the Star Trek Bridge Commander, Star Trek Legacy, and Tactical Assault. Nice. And then, of course, she wrote To Serve All My Days, which was a New Voyages episode, which actually had Walter Koenig in it.
Hmm. Nice.
So
nice.
That's the setup there for her. But what makes her really important to me is that she was a sort of a parable that my mom kept talking about regularly.
Explain.
So my mom would talk about her as a reason why my mom had to keep fighting the good fight, so to speak. Every time she'd be knocked down or taken out of a job because she was a woman, my mom would continue to reference D.C. Fontana.
Cool.
Which was right. Really cool. I mean, that was just neat.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Right, exactly.
So it was like, I really, it was kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain, but it was like, that's, so I always felt like D.C. Fontana was a connection through to my mom to some degree. My mom passed away in 02, And yeah. So, you know, it's been kind of a thing to have, you know, DC Fontana sort of in my life a little bit still, as still the great fighter of that.
I was watching, there's this great, like, five-part interview with Howard Stern interviewing Hillary Clinton. And really just a great conversation between the two of them. And she's promoting a book of, like, Gutsy Women or something to that nature. I can't remember the title of it. But, you know, I think it's important to, especially women, because Hillary comes from probably that time period as well.
Yeah.
That just there was no women, not a lot of women to look up to, you know, like they did this. They, you know, there's a road, there's a path or a way to do something. And
right. Well, Whoopi Goldberg says that about Nichelle Nichols.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. So there's so much of that that's cool to see when it happens. And, you know, I can imagine your mom used her as a gold standard of how, you know, how to do things, or maybe, you know, just watch her career, you know, and how to model after it, you know, because that's all we can do.
Right.
You know, stand on the, you know, shoulders of giants and keep on moving on. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And I'm also looking at all the stuff that she's written as well. Just there's so many different writing credits from Bonanza. What's it? The $6 Million Man.
Mm-hmm. Babylon 5,
Logan's Run,
Babylon 5, man.
Buck Rogers, He-Man and the Masters of the Universe,
She-Man,
Legend of Prince Valiant,
right?
Captain Simian and the Space Monkeys. I don't know which one that was. Even Beast Wars of Transformers. So,
oh wow.
She's definitely been quite active throughout the years, not just with you know, Star Trek.
Obviously, right.
Star Trek, she put her mark on it, and she developed a lot of the Vulcan mythos too.
She's the core behind Spock.
Yeah.
I mean,
do you know
she really is, like, all the depth in Spock, Journey to Babel, and, you know, she's the one who invented Amanda and Sarek.
Right. She wanted to see all that happen, go down. What was she wanted to see with the relationship with her, with Spock's parents? You know?
Right.
Did she have anything to do with Discovery? Was she consulted at all with Spock's having, or with Sarek being like sharing his Katra? And was that any of her idea, or was that the Discovery writers running wild with Vulcans?
That was the Discovery writers by themselves. She wasn't involved at all in Discovery.
Well, I know she didn't write specifically, but I didn't know since you were saying she was like she invented a lot of the Vulcan mythos specifically. I didn't know if maybe they consulted her, if you'd heard anything, because I haven't. But
and I have to admit, Leith in Discovery is one of my absolute favorite episodes because of the way they took the mythos and evolved it. Because for years, I mean, you know, it was that Sarek is just cold and bitter and a jerk, and that Spock is a bitter jerk because Sarek is a bitter jerk. And the only person that was out there was Amanda, who had to slap both of them, literally,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. To get them to just get over their dumb pride with one another. And it's been kind of, I mean, it was extremely edgy in 1968, but after 30 years, everybody does it, right?
Yeah.
And so that was what was so genius about Leith, was taking the why and dropping the depth of that another 20 feet. You know what I mean? That was already a pretty deep relationship in 68, but it got, you know, everybody said, wow, that's an incredible relationship. We're going to do the exact same thing. And so everybody did. And you ended up with clones of what Dorothy Fontana wrote, and it makes it passé, you know?
Yeah. I guess so, it's like someone does a stylistic of a movie or a song or something like that, and then everyone copies it, and then right. it becomes and you see the original, and you're like, what's the big deal? And you're like, well, because nobody did this before,
right?
Exactly. And so it's I mean, there's a reason why everybody's paying homage to Dorothy Fontana. I mean, she did like all of these first hit sort of things.
Yeah.
Charlie X is a premise that Roddenberry had that she wrote out. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
One of the things that is so fascinating about Dorothy Fontana is the fact that she had a great feel for depth of person. Right? I mean, you think about the ones that she really worked on. I mean, things like she wanted to have Way to Eden, which was a pretty rough episode to begin with, to have Joanna from Dr. McCoy's Daughter involved as depth. And right. they took it out, and Way to Eden's just stupid.
Yeah, it is. It is, unfortunately.
Right? Yeah. And it's like, it just made the episode weak. Instead, they connected the character to Chekhov, because they were trying to make it more edgy and relatable to the kids. And it would have been so much better if that had been McCoy's daughter.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Give it some kind of connection instead of a bunch of random hippies.
Right? It was just a bunch of space hippies that were stupid.
Yeah. And it's like, but if one of the space hippies was related to McCoy, everyone could make fun of McCoy. I mean, because Spock doesn't get to very, very often.
Right, but not only that, we get to explore the "we're from two different generations" talk. You know what I mean? Because McCoy right. would have been the dad who was in the military and straight-laced, had a perfect haircut, yada, yada, yada. And his daughter was this hippie who, at the time, this was actually like a real stressor. So, I mean, yeah. you look at the way that Way to Eden comes out as, eh. It's not one of the best third season episodes. It's pretty rough. I call their rewrite of pulling out Joanna as one of the great mistakes of Star Trek.
I know. You could have absolutely. This, you could have had this great like rift between daughter and father. Yeah.
And then think about where McCoy would be.
And then in Star Trek 5.
More grumpy.
And then in Star Trek 5, instead of his dad dying, he's got his daughter being a hippie. That's my greatest regret. That's my biggest pain.
My going down. Wasn't everything like acid down on that planet? Or like they all like died down when they went down
there? When they got there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. That'd been great. Like his flashback being his daughter. Oh, man.
No, I mean, that's.
I need my pain.
And you look at this and you think about all the things she's done with Star Trek. You know, it's, and you think, I mean, even Tomorrow is Yesterday. And what's Tomorrow is Yesterday about? It's about the going back in time, and we have to deal with this Air Force pilot who they picked up. But you notice what the hook is. It's not Christopher. It's not Captain Christopher that's the problem. It's Captain Christopher's son.
Yeah.
Right?
What he does. Yeah.
Right. It's so, and that is the moment that you go, whoa, in that episode. That's the hit. That's where you're like, your mind's blown. Mm-hmm. And you look at that episode and you think, wow, she just added so much depth to that by that one little thing. She was so good at one word being a big bat to smack you in the side of the head.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So on top of just the nature of the way she was, it being a woman in the 60s trying to make her way, I also really admire the way that she had such an elegant way of writing. Mm-hmm. You know, her writing was so elegant. It was so perfect. She could just make you care with just like two words or three words, you know?
Right. Yeah,
and it was absolutely. So deep.
You know, one of my favorite episodes, and we talked about this, I don't remember what episode we talked about it, Dave, but was the Enterprise incident, where they had to steal the cloaking device from the Romulans.
Earlier this year, I think.
Yeah, I think we did too. I just can't quite remember what episode it was, but she was unhappy with this because of the relationship between the Romulan commander and Spock. And so it's strangely enough, Dave, you have, when you want to talk about Ponfar and Vulcan sexuality, Fontana is the one who kind of like developed this. So, Fontana says that she was, that she came up with the idea that alien sexuality is not, an alien sexuality, but not human passion.
Oh my gosh. And, I'm sorry. It was just last year we did an Enterprise incident with Captain Foley, May 1st.
Oh, nice.
Episode 163. God, I thought it was this year. There you go. Oh my God.
It was a long time ago. Yeah.
It just feels like an eternity ago.
Yeah. But so they came up with the idea of Ponfar having sex every 7 years, and that and she did she wrote a sex scenes into a I think it's a book, Vulcan Glory.
Give me more, give me more than 7 years.
Yeah, it's a book. It's a book, Vulcan Glory. So that's a
Vulcan sex.
Glory. But she's I guess
Vulcan so, Glory Hole.
No,
so once every 7 years we will visit the Glory Hole.
They based the Enterprise incidents off of the, I guess it's called the Pablo incident, where a ship was caught spying.
The Pueblo incident, yeah, where that would have been AGER-2. It was an incident in North Korea during forces found a ship in Vietnam.
Right.
And, sorry.
Yeah, no, in 1968.
Military nut.
Yeah, and so that was it was based off of that, and then they decided they want to throw in this relationship between Spock and the commander, and I guess this is what Fontana says. This is a quote from her. It says, "Overall, it was not a bad episode, but I did have a lot of complaints about it, and things weren't approached or handled right. Let's face it, a romantic scene between the Romulan commander and Spock is totally out of context. Any Romulan worth their salt would have had instantly suspected Spock because they are related races. That was wrong. Kirk's attitude was wrong. The simple thing is a cloaking device was supposed to be a very small thing, about the size of a watch, for instance, and it could be easily hidden. Here's Kirk's running around with this thing that looks like a lamp and, you know, highly visible. This is stupidity as well as illogical thinking. Visually, it was stupid. Conceptually, it was very bad. And there were a lot of things, little things that were changed. But my biggest objection was the scene between Spock and the one, because I really did not believe it. And I did not believe that a Romulan did not suspect Spock of something underhanded. And she does know enough about Vulcan and Vulcans to know that something's afoot. So that was her comment of why she didn't like the. She wrote it.
She was going through Ponfar a little bit herself, and maybe that's why she was getting her hopes up.
Mm-hmm. Possibly.
Because I guess an Enterprise that it establishes that female Vulcans also Enterprise was it was Enterprise. The female Vulcans also go through Ponfar. We thought it might have been a male thing for a while, but women experience it too. So I guess they get to have sex twice every 7 years, depending on whichever one's going through Ponfar.
Fontana wrote sex scenes into Vulcan's Glory. So that's a book that she wrote. So, and I consider anything that Fontana writes about the Vulcan physique to be somewhat canonical. So that established that the Ponfar is only the fertility cycle, and the Vulcans can have sex anytime they want.
Oh.
So that's the establishment there, is that
so men are only fertile once every 7 years? That's weird.
Yeah, well, it still makes me sit there and do the math a little bit, and I'm like, that doesn't seem like that'd be very sustainable as a culture.
No.
But, I mean, that's like, you know, we've gone quite the extreme from having litters of animals to having just one animal every 9 potential or 10 potential months, which is what humans are, to having one animal every 7 years.
Right, exactly.
You know, that's pretty brutal. So this is like the far extreme from litters, you know?
Yeah, right, yeah. No, I know, it is odd. But, you know, whatever. Maybe there's enough population of Vulcans at the time.
Maybe it's a population control factor.
That's why the red matter was so devastating the Vulcans. They were endangering themselves.
You're just saying.
Now you're just making shit up.
They were nearly endangered on their own, and then Nero came along and really made them endangered. It's like, we're gonna have to speed up this fertility thing. Maybe once every 7 months.
Yeah. So I mean, that's cool. And like we said before, Yesteryear kind of like spelled out Spock's backstory growing up on Vulcan.
So much stuff is drawing from it.
Yeah. So yeah. We get a lot from that. So you know. That's, you know, Fontana's just going to be one of those people that, you know, are always remembered. And well, always remembered with fans, probably not remembered, you know, by the casual viewer
right.
of Star Trek.
Which was backed up by the fact that on most of my social media, you know, I've been hearing a lot about I turned my avatar to the, you know, black badge for Fontana, and then everybody started telling me about Robert Walker.
All right, yeah.
And I'm like, you guys aren't saying anything about
DC Fontana? Yeah.
I mean, that's a bigger hit to the universe than Walker.
Yeah,
I mean, not to diminish bad.
Walker either, but yeah.
Yeah. This is not to diminish Walker at all, but Walker was Charlie X, and that's great, but Fontana wrote Charlie X.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
I mean, it's like...
And let's face it.
Fontana established so much.
And Charlie X was is just such an obnoxious character, you know?
Yeah.
You're happy to see him go by the end of it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I think you even listed as one of your most unfavorite episodes, right, Dave?
I think it might have been one of my worst. I can't stand that kid. That kid drives me nuts.
Yeah. But, I mean,
although Yeoman Rand in the pink outfit was pretty nice, though. That was a highlight of the episode.
You know, it's like Kai Wynn. You know, you want to have that character that you just fucking hate.
So, I mean, that means it's well written when you just despise them immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just drove me nuts. And I mean, I guess that was good. I mean, that was the point.
Yeah.
She also hates computers because she wrote The Ultimate Computer, which we talked about on November 2nd, 2019.
We had
so much fun talking about that episode.
We did. It was such a great episode.
So some of these I'm noticing, it's kind of sad. So many of these episodes are now starting to not weather so well.
What do you mean?
Well, I think about like The Ultimate Computer, and I'm like, gosh, Siri could probably just outdo the M5 any day.
Siri's gonna kill those innocent people on that ore freighter. My God, right? Apple, what have you done?
I mean, I just, it's kind of funny that's the case. You know what I mean? I just find that somewhat humorous.
You can talk to Siri.
You look at the M5 and you're like, Daystrom just needed seriously to like calm down, but you know, I don't know.
Hi Siri, who created you?
Like it says on the box, I was designed by Apple in California.
What were you programmed to do? No, sorry.
Take over the world.
I wonder if mine will do that. Computer, who designed you? That's pretty straight up.
I couldn't hear it.
She said, I'm made by Amazon.
Oh. I have a computer too, but you're in headphones, so you didn't trigger my computer to say it.
Right? That's probably a good thing, because otherwise I'd end up doing all kinds of horrible things to you.
Yes, but I do it too. I trip up and I say computer, and then something happens, and then my Alexa talks it back at me. But it's ignoring it tonight, thank goodness.
Thank goodness. So we also have she rewrote The Site of Paradise,
right? Because that was another Spock heavy episode.
It was, and I love that episode. It's just so awesome to see Spock, you know, fall in love.
The spore plant episodes.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's great.
And that's the one where Kirk just decides to hold it together because he has to. I'm resisting the mind control because I have a toupee that doesn't just let it in.
Me. right.
He's like, I can't let Spock get more game than me. I can't let it happen.
Yes, I got to ruin everybody's fun.
Pretty much. That's what Kirk's driving force is.
We could all be happy farming on this planet, but Kirk's got to interrupt everything.
Kirk's like, she was supposed to be mine, and therefore, not going to let you have her.
Just saying.
No one can have her.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, so it's you know, she, yeah, I don't know. She's got a lot of great episodes that is under her belt, and she wrote so much, you know, and adds so much to the Star Trek universe. And like you said,
huge contributions, she, like kind of like the guy I said earlier, Counter Farpoint set everything up.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so rough couple days.
Yeah. Yeah.
And unfortunately, we are not the better for what's happened. And I mean, obviously, these people are at the time of their life where, you know, things aren't winding down, sadly enough, and it's going to happen to everybody eventually, but it doesn't take away the pain and knowing that, you know, we lost some great people, you know, during this week, and that we're all gonna have to look back at those episodes with maybe a little tear in our eye, thinking like, man, what a freaking awesome, you know, awesome character, awesome writer,
awesome actor.
Yeah.
Actors, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's rough. I mean, Deep Space Nine's gonna be super hard to watch. I mean, like, luckily, or the episode we watched recently, The Wire, didn't have Aaron Eisenberg in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it barely even had Odo in it, so it's just
like, yeah, Odo was in for, like, all of, like, three scenes, yeah.
Yeah, three scenes. He had more lines than Sisko and Kira combined.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know, and I've thought about this more often than not, that, you know, we are at the time where we're going to start losing more and more people, mm-hmm. Yeah, especially, yeah, from the original series. I mean,
they're in their 80s. Sadly, a human's lifespan right now is just about 80 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, yeah. Betty White is immortal, but even she's approaching 100. Yeah. You know, yeah. And so, and this is, these are all Betty White's, like, next generation peers. So yeah, they're the next generation down from Betty White's era. So, I mean, the fact that we have anybody from Betty White's era is amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Exactly. Yeah. I was driving home from work, and there was an NPR story about an older gentleman who, of, like, I think he was 102 and released his debut album.
Yes.
So there's hope yet for all of us.
Right.
And he wrote some lyrics, and some poems. One of his poems was published, and then a friend of his put it to a piano, and then he goes, hey, I got a bunch of other things you could put things in. And they start collaborating, and they got a whole band put together with singers. And he only does he doesn't sing, but he did a spoken word part in the beginning of a song, and then a singer takes over from there. But wonderful that, you know, you could still be at that age and still create, amazing. And still be viable.
Hopefully, we'll be still creating when we're that old.
Yeah, exactly.
I always hope so.
Yeah. So, yeah, unfortunately, we probably will be seeing that in the next, you know, couple of years. I know when Nimoy passed away, it was hard on you, Dave. I mean, not that it was hard on any of us, but I know you took it really hard. I know Shatner will be hard for me.
Yeah.
Shatner's going to hurt all of us.
Shatner's going to be real rough when he goes.
Yeah.
And we got, I mean, to, you know, any of them. Aaron and I got our picture taken with Shatner. I mean, like, I know tons of people have, but I mean, that's as close as we've gotten to many of the Star Trek actors. So we got our picture taken with them a couple years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'll have a rough time with Nichelle when she goes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
I actually was her handler once. So.
They don't fan dance like they used to.
Yeah. Right? That's a great fan dance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
If only it was rated R.
This is a family program.
Since when? If they listen to Last Week, we're definitely not a family program.
I know, yeah, especially the last episode. Well, guys, let's wrap this up. I know this is a hard episode. We hope we did justice by talking about all these wonderful people that unfortunately are not with us anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Rest in peace, everyone.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Dorothy, Aaron Eisenberg.
Robert Walker, Renee Auberjonois, yeah. Michael Lamper,
mm-hmm. Who else we lose this year? Lost.
We lost like three of them this week.
Yeah.
Four of them this week.
Yeah. I mean, I remember we talked about Yvonne Craig when she passed. That was like two, that was 3-4 years ago. Like, it was really early on.
We talked about her passing. Back, Yeah, absolutely.
We were in that little conference room at Yahoo.
way back when.
Way back when, on those awful saddle chairs.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, thank you so much for downloading the episode and, you know, enjoying our discussion about these wonderful people that are unfortunately have shuffled off the mortal coil. You can always contact us if you want to say anything about what we've talked about here. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. You can also just join our Facebook page, facebook.com/groups/synthaholics. Join the group. A lot of people, you know, we have discussions all the time about Star Trek and other related sci-fi and Star science Wars, stuff.
Actual science, anything. Pretty much. Lots of stuff show up on there.
Absolutely. You can tweet at us at Synthaholic Duo. And you can always, if you can, support the show. If you find the show valuable, you can go to our Patreon.com/Synthaholics. And donate some money to us there. We appreciate that. And as always, share this podcast through either social media or tell your friends and family and schoolmates. If anybody that you know that likes sci-fi, that likes Star Trek, let them know about about the podcast. And Guy, before we let you go, why don't you tell them all the places they can contact you? Guy is an amazing artist, so you definitely want to catch up with his art. And he's got the Rocky Mountain Geek Tank. So tell him where you can contact
you. Well, you can follow me on pretty much all of the social medias at GS Davis Art. So I'm on DeviantArt, and I'm on Instagram. I'm a deviant. And I'm working on right now two projects, Bellatrix Rising, which is really just an evolution of Tamerlan, and Witches of Flame, which is a alternate history comic. So those two are on there. You can find me anywhere there in that work. You can also find me at Rocky Mountain Geek Tank, where I do a podcast and talk to people, apparently. So
lots of people.
You talk to us sometimes, too.
I even talk to you guys. Yep.
Yeah, guy's an amazing artist, and you'd really get into his stuff. And obviously, you're here for Star Trek. Check out his USS Tamerlan. But also, like I said, he's working currently on Witches of Flame. And what's the new title of the other thing that you're working on?
It's called Bellatrix Rising. Yeah, I decided to do the Renegades trick and just take all the characters out of Tamerlan and put them in a new story, which is in my own universe.
Nice.
It's very liberating, actually, because I've been having a lot of fun with, well, if I don't have to be limited to warp drive, what kind of space drives would I have?
Link drive.
So, you know, I've been doing all that stuff and thinking it through and like...
Do the Battlestar Galactica, just blink out, blink there. Where did we jump to? I don't know.
We're going somewhere. I don't know. But, yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
You could do Starbucks and Starbuck instead of Starbucks having Starbucks.
There you go. I have that picture somewhere. Starbuck and Starbuck having Starbucks and Starbucks.
Yes.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. Good stuff. So, anyway, well, guys, that's where I'm headed there.
Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for your Trek knowledge, and especially talking about DC Fontana and, you know, all the... You know, history behind her that
people may not know, and hopefully we're educating people along with her sad news of passing.
Yeah. And thank you for calling on me. I was really honored that you remember that DC Fontana is one of my heroes, and B, that you called me in to talk about her.
Well, I had to bring our best player off the bench,
right? Thank you.
I appreciate absolutely. Well, everyone, hopefully next week will be a little more cheerful. But until then, hopefully there will be no more deaths. And we can just be happy for a little bit with the memory of these people and sit back, watch some Star Trek, watch some old TOS or original or next gen or pop on DS9.
DS9, yeah.
And take in some Odo. So, but Until next time, live long and prosper, one and all.
Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Woo, none of us died during the making of this episode. Woo.
Not yet.
No podcasters were killed in the making of this episode.
No podcasters were harmed. Oh, man.
They should have been.
I thought a giant grand piano fell in my head. Who framed Reggie Grauer?
I didn't know there was a piano in the attic.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Sounds like a sound of a tool chest falling down the stairs. Home Alone. They'd be so dead. It was a fun science video someone did on YouTube of like what those injuries would do to a person. Like, they'd be dead.
Many times over. Yeah, big time. Yeah, that last drawing that you did of, I'm assuming that was...
That's the captain.
That was a wonderful drawing.
Well, thank you. I'm trying to get more life in my pictures. They don't feel... I still feel like they're not very alive yet. So I'm working on that.
How do you mean?
I don't know. It's hard to explain. But like, you look at a Disney picture and they've got life to them. They're moving. You can see. Whereas you look at my pictures and they look static, like they're standing still. And it's so hard. I've been reading a book called Drawn to Life, mm-hmm. and it's by Walt Sheffield, who was one of the 9 old men of Disney.
Okay.
And he used to teach classes with the animators. You know, you get hired by Disney, and then you had to take these mandatory classes with him, where he would teach you how to be a Disney animator. And I've been reading, and they when he passed away, they compiled all of these notes that he had written, and it just made a book.
Oh, that's awesome.
And there's two of these, and they're the most incredible books.
Liking this episode, and then recently rewatched the episode and thought, this sucks.
That's great. Yeah.
Like the Sanctuary episodes.
Sanctuary.
I really wish we'd
have had it. It was actually not a bad episode, though. I mean, it's like, it wasn't a terribly bad episode. It really wasn't like the worst episode ever. But.
Yeah, I just think, that was a good episode when we talked about the 7 years till Sanctuary.
I know, we were talking about Trump.
Yeah, I thought it was four. Yeah, yeah. Trump. It was Trump and Hillary. We were both like, yeah, either way, we'll probably get them.
It was the funniest thing, though, because it was like, we were all like, oh my God, this is like the future.
It's happening.
I know. So weird. Is there anything that you want to just talk about, too, when we start the show? Other than those topics that we're going to obviously talk about.
No, I mean, what? All we've really had is a whole bunch of horrible deaths in
horrible news.
Well, let's talk about these people and what they've done and what they've mean to us. Let's not just talk about how horrible they are.
Oh,
that they've died.
The death is never ending.
When will the death stop? 2016
all over again.
I know. Yeah, I know. I just didn't know if there's anything else you wanted to bring up.
No. I'm actually looking everything up so that I have it. So that I've got all of these things ready so that when we start talking about him.
Yeah.
I can bring these things up because I know that the way that this works.
How does it work?
I don't know. I don't know.
All right.
Okay.
Everyone's ready. Just no. And then, Dave, you all set?
I have some good stories from Rene Aubergeois, so...
Oh, that's good.
Oh, do you?
I'll share those.
Yeah, because I haven't met him, and I don't think Aaron has either. Oh, but yeah, I can start a new file right now. Give me one sec.